Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Jawanza. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's truly an honor to have you along. Again, as always, thank you for taking time out of your schedule, your busy day to tune in. And we have lined up for you another powerful, powerful, powerful show. Oh, my God. My special guest, again, if you've been following this series, you've been blessed as well as us, is Owahehi Metuerahin-Comet. He's an awesome guest. He's Paramount King of the Washington, D.C. region of the Osara Set Society, and we've been talking about the 11 laws of God, and what a series this has been. So very, very powerful, and I'm just so fortunate enough to have my brother along with us between flights, and I mean, he's been very gracious in agreeing to come on our show, and again, we're so very fortunate to have him on board. This week, we're going to be talking about the fifth sphere on the Tree of Life, called Netaru, which is the law of Uru Kahuti. By the way, I want to just say welcome to everybody that's listening, tuned in, who are members and who just happened to be at the 31st Street Baptist Church in Richmond, Virginia, announced the show that Brother Orwa was coming on. So I want to say thank you so much for tuning in. Let me get to my guest. Brother Orwa, as always, it's a pleasure to have you along. Welcome back to Jawanza for Life.
Thank you for having us back.
Truly an honor, brother. Again, as I mentioned to the listeners, we've been going down the tree of life, and we've been talking about the 11 laws of God. And, again, I don't want to just take for granted that everybody is aware of what the 11 laws of God are. There may be people tuning in for the very first time talking about 11 laws of God. I didn't know there was about anything about 11 laws of God. So if you would, could you give us a background first? What are the 11 laws of God, and how we, just went from zero and up to now, the fifth sphere, and how these faculties draw upon each other?
Sure. The scriptures of ancient Kemet begin with, there's a text called the Book of Knowing the Manifestations of Ra and of Overthrowing Opep, which is dated around 2100 BC. That's the oldest written copy of the text. The doctrine is older, but that's as far back as we've been able to document a physical copy. And in this text, it talks about how the Supreme Being, who referred to itself as Nebuchadnezzar, acting alone, it says specifically acting alone. So this is the first and the oldest representation of monotheism in existence. It brings the reality or life or creation into existence. And it talks about how the first thing that God did prior to manifesting the world that we know, the universe, etc., was to bring into existence Ma'ar, which is the law. Mm-hmm. And so the law then was the foundation upon which the world was created, or the universe's creator, or the manifestation took place. And the law, our ancestors organized in what's called the Pout Neteru, or the group of laws that spoke to how creation was organized and how the world operates. And so there's 11 laws that compose the Pout Neteru. And the first law, and again, I'm going to reiterate this point, that these are laws which not only govern the creation of the world, but also govern our spirit and how we operate in the world. Because our ancestors were very clear that, you know, we were made, man was made in the image of God. Therefore, we have the same potential, the same opportunities, the same qualities as the Supreme Being. So, and as above, so below. If the Supreme Being requires law in order to execute or manifest or accomplish things in the world, so too do we. So these 11 laws give us the spiritual backdrop around which to look at and evaluate the things that we are confronted with in life to help us in our quest toward awakening the divinity within us, or becoming the God-man and God-woman, women that we're destined to be. So the first law is the law of Amen. And the law of Amen basically states that peace is my true nature, that no matter what the circumstance or the situation, the natural response that I should have is one of peace, because peace is the only thing that doesn't harm me. Anything that's harmful to us is not natural to us. Right? People want to say that, well, you know, it's okay to do this or that because they're natural. Yeah, they may be natural, but if they're harmful, they're not natural to our system.
Right.
So if I am confronted with a situation and I get upset, emotionally charged or whatever, well, science has shown that these emotions, emotionalism, anger, etc., that these things harm us physically, but they also impede and minimize our intellectual capabilities as well. It's our IQ drops when we get angry, what we call anger or grief or worry or upset. Our ability to mentally evaluate and move forward in the situation is diminished because we allow these emotions to affect how we respond to the situation. So the natural response then is peace. And coming out of that peace, then, that means that the second law leads us to Osir, which says that nothing can be against me. My ability to be at one with all is summarized in the fact that if I respond with peace, then there is no division, there is no opposition. You know, in the scriptures of Kemet, emotions are pictured as the enemies of Osir. Because why are they the enemies of Osir? Because they destroy the oneness. They destroy my ability to unify and respond to a situation with peace. So it's through the law of Osir then that I'm able to take a situation, be confronted with a situation, and unify with that situation. The law of Tahuti, which is the third law, basically says it gives us the ability to learn directly and objectively from God. So it's the wisdom faculty of the Supreme Being. And basic foundation of this law is that what I want for myself, I should want for others. If there's to be peace, if there's to be oneness, then there can't be anonymity. I can't seek advantage over someone, because by doing so, I'm only creating a scenario in which that individual is going to plot on how to reclaim the advantage. So all situations, in order to be divinely constructed or resolved, there must be a win-win included in that situation. So that's the only way that we are able to maintain peace. You know, you can't force peace on someone. You can vanquish someone. You can overpower someone and enforce submission, but submission is not the same as peace. You know, people talk about going to war to establish peace, but if the war is not just, if there's not a win-win, if both sides don't come out feeling that they've been dealt with correctly, then you're only forestalling an eventual eruption in the so-called peace that you believe. I mean, all the wars that have been fought, you would think if war was the solution, then there should be no more war. But the fact of the matter is that these wars that they're being fought are not fought from the divine perspective. These are wars of aggression, wars of advantage, as opposed to wars of reconciliation. So the fourth law, which is the law of Secher, says that everything, all the events in our lives are planned. That we come to earth with a destiny. Just as the Supreme Being created the world, then each of us as a part of that world, also a part of that divine plan. And the situations and circumstances that we are confronted with in life are circumstances and situations through which we are to realize our divinity through exercising, following, and reconciling the challenges that we're confronted to us, or we're confronted by. That these are lessons that we need to learn. So the fact that things are not accidental or random, but planned out, are opportunities, just like when you go to school. You know, when you go to school to the sixth grade, you just don't go in there you shouldn't just go in there and the teacher just come off the top of their head with, well, today we're going to do this. No, there's a plan, there's a structure, there's a curriculum, there's a path that we need to follow in order to reach our objective. And so too is in our lives. We all come to earth with a destiny. We all have the same destiny, that is to become a God man or a God woman. But we have different paths that we each need to follow in order to realize that destiny. So that's the curricula of our lives, is organized by the Supreme Being. So that's the fifth law. Ma'at is the sixth law, and Ma'at basically says that everything in our life is regulated. That, you know, we talk about the construction, the manifestation, the creation of the world following a lawful path. Well, if it's law involved, then everything is interconnected and interrelated, that things aren't separate and disjointed, that everything is a reflection of a whole. There's a process involved. And so we say with this law that, you know, God comes into the world through his creation. And the only aspect of creation that affords the fullness of God's potentiality is man. So for God to realize its true qualities, we have to put ourselves in sync with the divinity and become the vessels through which God can express itself. Which brings us then to the law of today, which is Hergehuti. Now, Hergehuti, if there's law, then there has to be a process for preserving the law, for reestablishing the law. Whenever law is violated, if the thing is swung out of balance, then there has to be a force responsible for reestablishing that balance. And that's what Heruguhuti represents. Heruguhuti is that faculty within the spirit that is responsible for keeping things, for addressing infractions of the law and maintenance of the law. So in order to do that, in terms of manifesting through our personality, then, you know, the traits of what we call courage, risk-taking, competitiveness, leadership, through force, combativeness, initiative, executive, these are all personality traits of Heruguhuti. These are the abilities to confront a challenge. You know, what is courage? Courage is confronting a challenge, something that's potentially dangerous. Risk-taking means to be on the cutting edge of something. So it's the Heruguhuti concept of reestablishing. You know, it's very easy to accept the status quo, right? If everybody accepts the status quo, then nothing changes, there is no conflict, etc. But there are those people who aren't satisfied with the way things are. They see that there's something wrong and needs to be addressed. There's something that's not quite what it should be and needs to be improved. And that's the courage to step out on that limb, to be the focal point of the lightning rod. That's what this Heruguhuti energy is about. That's what this law is about. If the world was complete, then there would be no need for improvement. If the world was complete, there'd be no need for development. So, you know, we can just accept the way things are, but that doesn't make things better. So there has to be a force responsible for moving the process along, stimulating the development of something. Otherwise, things will just die. You know, if there's no energy to force something to grow, then things will stagnate and die. So Heruguhuti gives us that courage to step forth and address the situation that we're confronted with. So in terms of manifestations of talents, the qualities of analytical thinking, entrepreneurship, risk-taking entrepreneurship, right? The entrepreneur is the person who is willing to risk it all in order to have a better situation for themselves. You know, if there's no danger of loss, if there's no challenge, there's nothing to force, right? If I can't lose anything, if I don't have the opportunity, let me rephrase it. If I don't have the if built into the situation is not the opportunity to lose, then I'm really not challenging anything. So The greater the challenge, the greater the reward. So the entrepreneur is the person who is willing to put it all on the line. When you go out and say, I'm going to do it for myself, I'm going to make my own way, then you're putting it all on the line. People like surgeons are performers, precision performances. These are all Heruguhuti kinds of trait talents, right? When a person takes the knife and is going into the heart to remove or whatever, you know, there's great risk at work here. So you have to have courage to put take that kind of step. In terms of our spirituality, it's the courage to address the challenges that we face in our life, to face the challenge, to face the opportunity, the difficulty, whatever, how we perceive it, to confront it, to move forward. You know, again, if we just accept the status quo, we will continue to do what we do. But we know that for us to become better, for us to awaken our divinity, there are things that we're doing now that we have to evolve past. But having the courage to step up and take on that challenge is what Hieroglyphy represents in terms of our evolution, spiritual evolution. So, you know, it's the part of the spirit where we make things right. And by right, we mean what it should be according to the divinity, according to our law, to the divine law. So justice is not, there's no punitive edge to justice, true justice, spiritual justice. Spiritual justice is just establishing what is right. There is no revenge motive in justice. You know, justice is about reestablishing what is correct in the situation. If I am looking to avenge or revenge, then I am not functioning from spiritual justice. I'm allowing emotions, etc., to guide my response to the situation. So Hieroglyphy then is that energy that we use in order to just stand up for what's right. Just make what's right in our lives the model around which we build. To the goal to eliminate the problems. If I have a negative habit, a negative situation that I'm confronted with, is to face that situation and defeat it. You know, that's what the true warrior is. The warrior is not the one who starts a war. The warrior is the one who ends a war. So the war is the situation in which things are out of balance. So the role of Hieroglyphy is to reestablish equilibrium, to end the conflict, to end the disturbance, to end that which is out of order. So those are the kind of ideas or the kinds of principles, values that are summarized within this law.
Well, brother, I want to read the law, and we can discuss this, continuing with the conversation. The law of Hieroglyphy states that, know that God neither punishes nor rewards nor protects, that you will have the comfort of controlling these for yourself. And I'll repeat it. Know that God neither punishes nor rewards nor protects, that you will have the comfort of controlling these for yourself. Now, that law, it flies in the face of a lot of people's conditioning, you know, because depending on what spiritual system you were brought up in, many teach that God does protect, that God does reward, and God does punish. So could you speak on those aspects of the law and break that down? Because, again, it flies. I'm sure there are people out there listening to that and are saying, wait a minute, God doesn't protect? You know, even if I'm right? You know, so could you discuss that, please?
Well, again, if we live according to the law, that is our protection. If we live according to the law, that will establish the balance of the proper energy in our lives, right? If I'm eating incorrectly and I get ill, I should pray to God to make me well? No, I should eat properly, and that way I won't get ill. If I'm consuming intoxicants and I become ill or whatever, it's the living according to the proper relationships, living according to the law, functioning in an interdependent and interrelated way with my peers. I don't have to worry about protection if I'm functioning properly with everyone. If I live my life such that I approach you from an interrelated, interdependent situation. If I'm always looking for the win-win when we come together, then I have to worry about you stabbing me on my back, because you're going to appreciate the fact that I'm looking out for our best interest, which is what is the collective. But if I'm only looking out for my own self-interest, then I have to be concerned about someone else taking advantage of me, because I'm not taking them into consideration. So if I live my life according to the law, then I don't have to worry about being violated in any way. I don't have to worry about the need for protection, because I give myself protection by living the law. So that's what the statement of the law is speaking of.
Okay. Well, can you talk about the law of Rukuhuri as it relates to, say, karma? Because there may be people who experience certain things going on in their life, and it may be, in their mind, they might not understand how or why this situation has come upon them. Now, of course, looking at things from a spiritual perspective, you know, we understand that everything comes to you for your reclamation of peace, that you may in turn acquire wisdom and spiritual power. But those who might not be familiar with that law may, you know, wonder, well, why am I experiencing this? And when it comes to karma and Hurukahuri being the law that deals with justice, could you talk about karma and Hurukahuri, that energy as it relates to karma?
Well, again, karma basically says that the thoughts I accept are going to guide what takes place in my life. You know, that if I choose to drink, for example, then I can expect that I'm going to have problems related to drinking. It could be, you know, alcohol addiction. It could be, you know, bad judgment because of being drinking alcohol. It could be diminished brain capacity because of drinking alcohol, whatever the situation is. So the correction or the solution to the problem is to live according to the law. That if I make the right decisions, then I can expect the right results. And if I don't make the right decisions, then there's a force within nature that is responsible for trying to mitigate against the wrong decisions that I've made. So if I drink something, like if I drink alcohol, and I vomit, that's the body trying to reestablish the equilibrium. That's the force of Hurukuhuri at work within me. So it's always about, you know, reestablishing the balance. When something is pushed one way, there's an opposite force that seeks to restore it to the center. So everything is about maintaining the balance in life. And Hurukuhuri is that force in nature that's responsible for maintaining balance or establishing equilibrium or justice, if you will.
Okay.
Atep Orwaz, this is Aquia Chef Nitan. I have a question. When we are in the month of Hurukuhuri, do we have more energy available to us? I know this is the month of Hurukuhuri. So, and, you know, is there more energy available to us to assist us when we're actually in the month of the faculty that, of a particular faculty?
Yes. Think of it this way. Everything in life is accomplished via energy. And energy operates on different wavelengths, different vibrations. So there's different qualities of energy responsible for different things in the world. If I want to accomplish something, and let's just give it, color coordination. Let's say that the energy necessary is the energy of red. If I want to be successful in addressing this situation, then I need to gather as much of this red energy as possible to address this situation. It's like, it's analogous to swimming with the current or swimming against the current. If the predominant energy is blue and I need red, then I'm going to have difficulty working through that situation. But if an energy that's required is blue, and I master blue, I mask blue, then I'm going to be more efficient in whatever the challenge that situation is. So to answer your question, yes. Whenever that particular vibration is dominant within the atmosphere, then there's more of that energy available, which means that we can address things of that nature that require that energy in a more expeditious way.
Okay, thank you. One more question. If there's a situation concerning something like legal, a legal matter, and it's a matter of justice, I guess, being rendered, but man's justice may not be the same, of course, as God's justice. How does Haruka Hoodie, what factor does Haruka Hoodie play in that part as far as for the individual who is standing on God's principles of order?
Well, in every situation, what we should seek is what's right, which may not always be in our favor. Meaning, as long as we seek what's just in a situation from the divine perspective, then that's the correct thing to happen. To assume that everything that goes against us is an injustice toward us would assume that everything we do is correct. But everything we do is not correct. So we need to just always seek to find out what is the right thing here.
Mm-hmm.
The right thing may not be in our favor, but it may be the correct thing to move us forward. You know, we learn, our lessons are learned through how we adapt and respond to challenge. You know, sometimes we just want to ease the challenge as opposed to confront the challenge.
Okay.
Brother, could you talk about the, for individuals who may have Haruka Hoodie incarnation objective, just so happens that Queer Chef Natera and I both share Haruka Hoodie incarnation objective. For those who may have that, somebody might be listening, might have a Hoodie incarnation objective, what types of life's opportunities, I'll say, can a person with that incarnation objective expect?
Well, we would expect that these are people that want to, are comfortable in taking the lead in situations. There are people who are also comfortable in what other people would call challenging situations or dangerous situations. You know, these are people who would gravitate toward situations where life and death are predicated on the decisions that are made. So soldiers, people in military, people in police, law enforcement, risk takers, Wall Street kind of bankers, I mean, people who are willing to put fortunes on the line, gamblers, you know, all these are surgeons, people who live or just plain entrepreneurs, willing to put their success on their own efforts and go out there and carve a path where there's no path. You know, Haruka Hoodie is that energy that clears the way. you know, if there's already a path there, then there's no challenge, there's no risk. But if there's no path, I come from this thick forest, and there is no cleared path, then the decisions I make are going to determine my success in moving through this forest. So, you know, if you walk into the park and there's a nice, wet, winding path, then there's no risk there. But when you are walking through the forest and there's no path, there's no beaten trail, you're not sure what you might step on or in towards. So Herakuthi people are people who are willing to stand out there and take risks.
Okay, so does it also entail, if a person gets a Herakuthi an incarnation objective reading, that these qualities of courage and so forth that you mentioned, are they qualities that the person needs to develop in this particular life, or is it basically stating that they have these particular qualities and they should engage in or are more prone to involve themselves in the fields that you mentioned, like, you know, the risk takers or the surgeons or maybe even an airplane pilot or, you know, something that would involve a lot of risk?
Well, it could be hyper or hypo, meaning you might have that situation because you need to cultivate these skills. Or you might have that situation because you need to tone down these skills.
Mm-hmm.
So, Herakuthi, some people come into the world breathing fire. Well, not everything requires fire. Some things require water. So you have to, in that situation, you have to learn to dial it back. Learn the proper execution of this energy, the proper application of this energy. Some people never want to stand up for anything. They never volunteer for anything. They never try to take stand for anything or challenge anything. They just constantly are blown. Whichever way the wind blows is the way they go. Well, sometimes you have to stand against the force. You have to stand up for the wind. You just can't fall like a feather just because the wind is blowing this way. Sometimes you need to take that challenge on the head and confront that challenge head forward. So a person could have this as a destiny aspect or a personality trait because they need to learn to the proper application of this energy.
Okay. Well, if we could talk briefly about the different parts of, shall I say, the different levels of spiritual development. Because as I was reading in the 11 Laws of God, talking about how quote, punishment, end quote, for different individuals, the punishment would vary depending upon that person's level of spiritual development. For example, somebody who was, spiritually immature might not be held to the same level of, quote, punishment, end quote, as somebody who is spiritually mature. So I guess that would be the Abman, the Ba-man, and the Sahu-man. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, meaning that the same kind of principle at some point should be included into the laws, the judicial system that we live under. However, because those that run the judicial system are operating from the lower parts of the spirit, the insight that you just relayed is not there. There was times when a young person could do something and understand that this young person is doing it because they are not able to their brain is not fully developed. You know, they haven't been, so their responses to things is not but it should be. They haven't learned how to respond appropriately to all situations. So they'll make an error or they'll do something that's wrong simply out of ignorance, simply out of immaturity. So you wouldn't want to punish that person to the same level as you would as an adult who would do the same thing. For example, let's just take something that's kind of out there. A little two-year-old boy, if you leave him walking around without his diaper, he's going to pee on your floor. But, you know, a 30-year-old man who is not mentally incapacitated should know better than to pee on the floor.
Right.
So, you know, the response you would have for the two-year-old should be far different from the response that you would have for the adult in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you're not able to differentiate between levels of spiritual cultivation, and you yourself are maybe 30-year-olds physically, but still operating mentally or psychologically as a 2-year-old, then you're not going to necessarily see and make the proper assessments based on circumstances and situations that you're confronted with in life. For example, if you give a child its option of what to eat, some cake or some asparagus, the child is most likely, 99% of the time, going to take the cake. Now, there are a few strange children out here. Strange meaning truly operating maybe above their level of maturity. But as an adult, if I'm given the option of cake or asparagus, if I choose cake, then I may physically be adult, but spiritually or psychologically, I'm still functioning as a child. So it's as we evolve spiritually from the control of the emotions and the sensations to a period of space in our spirit where we now confront these emotions and sensations to a space where we now are the controller of these emotions and sensations is the path of spiritual evolution. The spiritually uninvolved, or the sahu man, as the term you use, is the one who allows their emotions and sensations to determine what they do. The ba man is the man who who confronts the emotions and sensations, goes to battle against them. But then the Ba man is the one who has mastery over the emotions and sensations. If we think of them as animals, which is how our ancestors portrayed them, on the Sahu level, the animal runs the show. At the Ba level, the animal is being trained. I'm sorry, the Ab level.
Mm-hmm.
Or broken. And at the Ba level, the animal is now submits to the will of the master. So, you know, our course through life is one of addressing these animals that reside within us through our brain, the animal parts of our brain. So we know where we are spiritually based on how we respond to these animals or how they respond to us. If I leave my life based on my feelings, my emotions, right? Some people say, most people, Sahu people, will not do something if it doesn't feel right. Well, if I don't like it. Well, you can, a person who's addicted to cocaine, it feels good to them. But that doesn't mean that that's the correct thing for them to do. So it's when I'm at the crossroad where I am now confronted with this emotion, this feeling, this animal within me that's saying, snort this drug. If I master or exert the fortitude, the spiritual address, if I behutet, meaning if I hibrakuti this situation, if I take on this challenge, if I confront this challenge and defeat it, then I am setting myself up to become the master of it, which is the spiritual evolutionary process. So at the hibrakuti stage, hibrakuti is where we cut, and you know the cutting is that sharp point, is that point of decision. We cut from the lower to allow the higher to grow. Everything responds to energy. Everything feeds on energy. Weeds and roses all use the same sunlight. If I want my roses to grow, then I have to cut the weeds. I have to prune the weeds in order for that which I want to develop. So, you know, as above, so below. If I want the higher parts of my spirit to be nourished, then I have to take the nourishment from the lower parts and let that energy now guide that energy toward awakening and developing the higher parts.
Okay, I have another question. What are the ways to cultivate the hibrakuti faculty? Maybe it's meditation, qigong, different things that you can use to help to, I guess, to strengthen that faculty.
Well, all of those things. Diet.
Okay.
Is one, because, you know, most people who do wrong because, not because they necessarily don't know what's right, but because they're ill. Years, generations of wrong diet, years, generations of intoxicants, alcohol, tobacco, other kinds of drugs, all of that undermines genetically the health of a person. So the first line of defense is correction of the diet. Now, to correct the diet, we're going to need, it's just not about eating properly, you've got to do that, but there's also repair that needs to take place. Supplements and things that need to happen in order to correct or circumvent the problems that have been created by these generations of ill diet. So health, diet, supplementation, exercise, qigong, other energy manipulation systems, all of which it's about reestablishing proper equilibrium, reestablishing balance. That's what hibrakuti is, reestablishing the balance. So if a person has been destroying their brain, destroying their liver, destroying their lungs, destroying their kidneys, whatever, then in order for us to move forward, we have to first get these things back to a point of homeostasis. So it's nutrition and nurturing and mediation, medicine from the standpoint of herbal supplementation, and meditation. Meditation is a process through which we're able to guide and reconstruct the pathways that these energies flow in. Right? Mm-hmm. If my energy is flowing in a particular vein, then I have to be able to create a new vein, a new channel. And meditation, through the work of trance and imagination, visualization, are the keys to creating this new pathway, to guiding, connecting these new synapses in the brain, to challenge the energy to move in a different way, to correct the errors of the past, and to develop the fruits for the future.
Brother Orwa, that was a great answer that you gave, and I thank you for it. Could you now talk about prayer and just the role that prayer plays in all of this in the Kemetic spiritual system? Because the 11 laws are just that. They're laws. And so the laws are set. I mean, can the laws be for this? We'll just use Huru-Kahuti since we're talking about Huru-Kahuti. Can an individual, pray to, change the workings of this particular law? For example, if somebody violated the law of Huru-Kahuti and then asked for forgiveness, you know, because, again, in many systems, prayer is a very focal point of the religious system. You know, you pray for protection, you pray for healing, you pray for, whatever. But in this particular case, and Huru-Kahuti deals with justice, but an individual, say, pray their way out of the workings of this particular law, showing some sort of remorse or contrition?
Well, not as of such, meaning that prayer is a process of, well, depending on how the prayer is enacted, but it's a process of affirming a position. Now, we are able to, through the power of belief, to confirm situations. But by the same token, there's a limit to how far that can take us without us doing some corrective behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If a person is, let's just use an extreme example, and we've all seen scenarios like this on TV or whatever, where a person is an habitual violent person, right, where they are violent and then they are remorseful after the violence, but the remorse doesn't solve the problem in and of itself. Remorse is the first step toward change, but you have to then change it to create a new image, a new visualization. You can't just be sorry for what you did. You have to see the correct behavioral pattern. Otherwise, you're going to repeat the same problem. You know, there are people who love people to death, meaning, you know, they constantly abuse people. And out of the concept, they use the term of love.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not really love, right? There may be a strong emotional energy, but the emotion itself is the problem. You know, how do I correct and rechannel this energy? That's the solution. So we have to do something to make something better. You know, there's an old saying that God helps those who help themselves. So that's the idea. The foundation around which we have to, if we're going to make a change, if there's something wrong and we need to change, then we gotta make the change for God to help us resolve that change or manifest that change. You know, the law of Mart said, God needs me to come into the world. So for me to be a vessel for God to come into the world, I have to be a vessel through which all of these laws can flow. And so each situation is going to require a different kind of law, a different quality of energy. So I have to be the vessel to allow that change to take place. change is what I bring to the situation. No one can change me. I have to change. I have to guide that change. The divinity within me guides that change, but I have to accept that change and move forward, and with the courage of Haraguti, to confront that which needs to change and to change it. You know, there's all kinds of examples of people who are strung out on drugs, right? And people enable them, and people enable them, and believing that that's helpful. Well, ultimately, it's the person is only able to overcome that challenge when they ultimately are willing to confront it, to make that change. And so it's by confronting that situation and then moving forward toward changing that situation that we can solve the problems in the world. We just can't, we can pray and visualize those that are ill, and which does happen, does and can have an effect. But we then have to become the medium of that prayer and that visualization as well. Meaning, we can't visualize justice in the world if we're not just. We can't expect justice in the world if we're not functioning in a just manner. We can't expect love in the world if we're not functioning in a loving manner. And love, from the Kemetic perspective, is giving, seeking nothing in return. If I'm giving to you, but I'm expecting something in return, getting something back, then that's not true love. That call it whatever you want, but that's not the love that we speak of when we talk about Ma'at. So love, if I want love in the world, then I have to be loving. I have to be willing to give unprejudicially wherever is needed. I have to be willing to provide whatever I can give in a situation to help however I can. And I then have to visualize the world responding in that same way. But because I am living that way, my visualization now has more power.
Hello, Owa. I'm looking at the 11 Laws of God, the book by Shechem Shechem Ra'u Nefer Amen. And in the Haru Kahuti section, and there's a picture of Haru Kahuti, the faculty, with in his hands there is a knife, and then there's looks like a spear that's up to his own neck. Could you talk about the symbolism behind that, the meaning of that?
Well, again, earlier we alluded to the fact that you have to be willing to take the point, to cut through and away from. You know, you gotta be decisive. You know, all of those are images, but you also have to be willing to accept responsibility for what you've done. And the greatest energizer of this force is when we're willing to accept the responsibility for the wrong that we've made. So all of those are images of what it takes means to apply and cultivate this force within us. Have to be willing to cut away from the human to become divine. We can't be God men and God women if we want to hold on to human characteristics, human frailties, the human state of existence. So in the earlier parts of our evolution, the animal and the human nature dominate our function and behavior. But it's only when we're willing to cut that loose that the divine can open up and flourish, flow from within us. And that's what Haraguti represents.
That was also another question that I was going to ask, that do you have to be at a certain level of spiritual development, you know, just to be able to understand and actually want to apply these laws to your life? And I understand, I'm still learning the different divisions of man, but is there a certain level of development that you have to be at in order to really, you know, I guess, strive to be divine or Osea?
Well, yes and no. Meaning, it's not so much where you are, it's the environment in which you live. Meaning, if the whole society, if the ideas and the motives and the function of the society were in support of these laws, then a person may not be at that point, but they're being nurtured and guided to the point where they will then assume the responsibility of moving forward.
Okay.
But we live in a society where only the lower parts of being are encouraged and supported, where the human is accepted as the highest level of execution that we can ascribe to. And so if you circumscribe your belief in terms of what you can accomplish, then you're not going to go beyond that image. If we only accept the human self-image as who we are, the highest we can aspire to, then that's as far as we're going to go. And this is where the society is. I mean, you have these futuristic shows where star date 3567. And these folks are still running around acting like cavemen. They just have more advanced weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't see that there's something more, then you won't aspire to anything more. Mm-hmm. So the environment itself is a great factor in terms of moving the evolution of man forward.
Okay, thank you.
Wow. Brother, this hour went by so fast. Seems like we've been talking for 15 minutes. I want to thank you so much. Any final remarks on Haruka Huti? Again, to all the listeners, again, we're going down the tree, faculty by faculty. And if you happen to have missed a particular faculty, you can just go back to the archives and listen to the shows and get up to speed. This information is invaluable. And I'm going to tell you how you can get the book. I'll allow Brother Orwa to tell you how to get this book and any other books by Brother Shechem Shechem Ra'un Nefer Amen. Brother Orwa has written an awesome book. If you've ever considered an African name and any questions about how they are constructed, you definitely need to get this book. It's called African Names. This is by Orwa Hehi Meturan Comet. African Names, the Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. Brother Orwa, any final words on Haruka Huti before we tell them how they can get these books?
No, I just want to add a little another statement to the answer to the question that she just asked, is that if the environment does not support the spiritual evolution, then it necessitates for initiation. For those individuals who understand that there's something more that should be happening, they have to go through a particular course, a private course, a tailored course to awaken, cultivate these talents within them, these laws within them. And that's what the initiation program is designed to do.
And are there more than two main ones? I'm familiar with the Ra initiation and the, I can't think of the other initiation, but...
Osir.
Could you talk briefly those initiations?
Well, the Osir. Well, designed to... they're designed to give us the skills to awaken our divine self-image, which is what Osir is about, and to properly handle our life force toward the awakening of that divine image, which is what the Ra initiation is about.
And can the Ra initiation be started at any point? I know the Osirian initiation, I believe, started a couple of months ago. Can the Ra initiation be started at any point during the year, or does it start at a particular time?
Well, yes, there are ideal times to start, but the best time to start is when you can start.
Okay.
Because it's a process, and you're going to go through this process in a spiraling hierarchical manner, meaning you're going to address the same themes, but as you develop them, cultivate them, then you take them to another level. You look at the same things from a higher level. So, it started properly in February, but a person can come in now and begin to familiarize themselves with the process itself. You're going to learn something. You may not get the full experience, but the experience you get is going to serve you the next go-round when you're able to start from the beginning.
Well, Brother Orwa, again, I want to encourage everybody. We're going through the 11 laws of God, and if you want to follow along, you don't have to wait till the show. You can get the book. It's called Ma'at, The 11 Laws of God by Ra'un Nefer. Amen. He's the Shechem of Shechem of the Osiris Seth Society.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say that once we started reading this book, I know Jawanza had read the book probably several times before I actually got introduced to the book, but that really opened up my understanding and drew me closer to God. Mm-hmm. And, I would recommend this book highly to, anyone that's really trying to get a better understanding about their divinity.
Yes.
Excellent. It's an excellent book.
Absolutely. Brother Orwa, how can people get these books, the 11 Laws, Ma'at, the 11 Laws of God, the African Names, the Ancient Egyptian Keys, Unlocking Your Power and Destiny, the Madunater? How can they get these books, bro?
Well, they can Google TAUI, that's T-A-U-I,
mm-hmm.
Network, or TAUI Enterprises,
okay.
And they can purchase them through the TAUI Network website.
Awesome. Brother, any events coming up that you'd like to let the family know about? Any events coming up, any lectures, workshops in the D.C. Area, any classes that people, if they're in that area and they want to learn more about you do offer classes, if people want to learn more and, study, get more information
on
their
divinity. We do have the initiation classes that are every Saturday afternoon. And then we have workshops periodically. The next major workshop that we'll be having will be probably around the second week of June. It'll deal with the summer solstice and preparation for the summer solstice.
Okay. And what number can people call if they're interested in finding out the different times and of the classes and so forth?
It's 202-723-5566.
Okay. Brother Orwa, again, brother, as always, I know you're a busy man, and I really appreciate you making the time to, do the interview and to, share this information. Is invaluable, and I want to say thank you so much to Wau for everything, all of the hard work that you've done, that you're doing and continue to do, and for continuing to spread this information, because it's very, very necessary. I mean, you've been a teacher, a lecturer, a priest, a king. I mean, and, I'm honored to have the opportunity to speak with you. Akwia Shefnatan, I say Anetarak.
Yes.
Ra Tentapu, and I'm honored to have the opportunity to share with your listeners and you and your mate there with the program. Thank you so much for the forum.
Thank you so much. Brother, I will be in touch, and we will continue the series. Next month, we'll be talking about the Law of Heru. Okay, so everybody, you definitely want to tune in for that. Again, you can go back and listen to the archives. And Brother Orwa, I know we went a little over, and so again, I want to say thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, hit that.
Okay, hit that. Everybody, that was Orwa Hehi Metura in Comet, author of the fabulous book African Names, The Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. and we're talking about the 11 laws of God. The book is written by Shechem Meshechem, Rahu Nefer Amen. And again, if you're interested in this information, you know somebody that's interested in this information, tell them to tune in. And again, I want to say thank you so much. Matter of fact, we had a wonderful time. We just left D.C. This past Sunday. We had an awesome time. We went to the Haruka Huti ritual.
Yes.
That was awesome, wasn't it?
Yes, and it was my first experience attending the monthly ritual,
mm-hmm.
and it was a freedom. You know, it's hard to describe.
Mm-hmm.
You would have to attend, but it's just the information that we're learning is changing our lives.
Yes.
So again, we bring shows like this to help educate and inform our listeners of things that can help you in every area of your life. That's why the show is called Jawanza for Life. You know, whether it's health, spiritual development. So, you know, continue to tune in and go back, as Jawanza said, and listen to the archive shows. We have tons of guests, tons of shows, and we're looking for even more.
Yep.
So we're always going to be out here trying to spread the word.
That's right. As a matter of fact, we might have to change the name from Jawanza for Life to Jawanza and a Queer Chef's Chair for Life. Okay. I mean, I really enjoy Brother Orwa. This show is
just getting better and better.
And I'm always looking forward to when he comes on because this is food. This is spiritual
food.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
And you can grow by eating it.
And especially when you don't have the opportunity to fellowship in your own local town.
Correct.
You know, the shows give you an opportunity
mm-hmm.
to stay in tune. And when you do have an opportunity to go to maybe D.C. or to the classes, you know, that's a greater reward to be able to be there. And I thought it was really exciting, just some of the questions that he answered concerning the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, sometimes you don't think about that, but really, the environment does make a difference.
You know it.
A great difference,
mm-hmm.
Especially when you're in a world today that people, like he said, they're more on a humanistic level of dealing with issues, problems, and all that does is cause more health problems and more issues and more problems
mm-hmm.
in your life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not the answer.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Not the answer. So, you know, when you hear truth, you know it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to help me, if it's going to make me a better person, if it's going to help my health, that's what I want. And that's what we want to bring to you, our listeners. So we just thank you so much for tuning in and continue to tune in because we got some other great guests coming up. We got Coy Dunstan.
Oh, yeah.
Who talks about holistic health. He's in the Washington, D.C. area. We have Mike and Heidi.
Yeah, Mike and Heidi, Michael Perry and Heidi Lindman. They're also known as Swami Jyotir Vakyananda and Swami Abhipandananda.
Yeah.
They're talking about Kriya Yoga. They're Swamis in the Kriya Yoga tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And they are regular guests on our show, too.
Yeah.
And by the way, this Thursday, oh boy, we've got a special show.
Yeah.
Brother Hank Jones,
mm-hmm.
okay, he's co-author of Fire Without Flame. He wrote that with his wife, Yemi Jones. And if you all who are listening remember Yemi and Hank, as they're affectionately known, then you definitely want to tune in for that show. But again,
yeah, because he has a testimony.
Does he not?
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does. I love testimonies, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, I do.
Well, everybody, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. We certainly appreciate you.
Yes, we do.
And we just want you to know that we love you and we thank you so much. And I tell you what, we're going to get ready for the next show, okay? So I tell you what, make sure that you tell somebody to tune in. Again, we look forward to getting some feedback from you. You know you can always press 1 if you're listening. You can just press 1 if you want to talk, have a comment that you'd like to make with the guest. Don't be shy. Just tune in. Again, we love you. My name is Jawanza.
And this is Yvette Aquia, Chef Natea.
See you next week. Peace.
Peace.